Yeah, just talking about the extension model, the reality now, though, is the extension model's changing. And whereas here it has been heavily funded by the federal government, now it's moving to a pay-for-service model. So when you talk about exporting that model and would it work, you need to first say, well, which model you're talking about. Are you talking about centralized support from the government? That probably wouldn't work very well in countries that are struggling anyway, or anyway economically, but I'm not sure the pay-for-service model would work any better in a struggling environment. But the resources have been, I think, I'm married to somebody who works in the College of Agricultural Sciences, so I could pick up a little bit, you know, in the air. And I think the figure I heard was that funding had been cut 50% to agricultural extension at Penn State last year from the federal government.
That's right.
So,
yeah.
which goes back to the point I was making yesterday. Well, what do the stakeholders here get from this kind of engagement?
Yeah.
I think that's probably on the table.
I think it's a very, very important point. I mean, the whole notion of the non-zero sum, because many relationships are typically zero-sum relationships, winners, losers type of thing. And the core partnership model is a non-zero-sum partnership.
It is. It really is.
And I think there's an issue of sustainability at the PSU end or the American University end as well, is what makes an engagement sustainable on this end as well, in terms of that it's a meaningful relationship for both parties. Also, I'm particularly interested to hear a bit more about the Kenyan initiative, and I tell you why it's the Nigerian initiative.
Not to be confused with Nigerian scams.
fair enough.
I mean, so much invested in those banks.
given our work, you know, at the Commonwealth of Learning, I do believe we would be able to facilitate, you know, a number of networks, and this is something which we, as an agency, can bring to the table as well. So, I mean, if there are ways in which the Commonwealth of Learning can assist in the work that you're doing in Nigeria, unfortunately, Nigeria is part of the Commonwealth, so legitimately we can engage.
Well, this might be a good time to come in. Yesterday we talked about content development, that content is a very key area in terms of having online resources and freedom in terms of what is available there. One of the things that we want to be able to do is to develop content in a freely or more widely distributed, dispersed way that deals with African peoples and what's been going on, and just records it, because as you said yesterday, Africans tend not to be recorders of their history. And the oral tradition means that you have to have people who have it in their heads alive to continue that. And then, of course, you've got all of them dying off now. So what we would like to be able to see is some way in which, either through Wikipedia or one of the other projects that you've been talking about, is there some way that that can develop something more globally in Africa to develop that content and keep it there and have it an ongoing thing? And not just Nigeria, all over. Because when you look at the content that is available now, it has nothing to do, really. You can adapt it. You can adapt it, but it really doesn't have much to do with our situation there. And the second thing that I would like also to talk about is, yesterday we talked about the types of instruction and how culturally people tend to receive instruction and to use these contents materials. And we identified the fact that in Africa, and I'll talk about Nigeria and West Africa in particular, we tend to want to be led, and we also haven't developed, we get there, as Michael said, once you're introduced to it and you get some kind of comfort level, you do get to begin to think critically about it and so on. But right now, we do need that as a transition, as a bridge, some kind of aid to help see how can you use these in a different way? How can you become master of this thing that is out there and make it something new? And from that perspective, I think that a university like Penn State can provide some partnership assistance in that coming together with educators, and I'm looking primarily at the secondary level because we need to develop that capability lower down before you get to the top. And so a model could be short-term kinds of partnerships, not at the tertiary level, but short-term partnerships where people from both sides come together and meld together their own ways of doing things so that each can help the other to see what are the new ways that you can interact with these content materials.
Yeah, we haven't talked about this particular aspect of it, so this is a new thing. But in terms of what Michael was saying too about sharing things, we pay a lot of lip service in the U.S. in terms of cultural diversity and valuing the way other people do things and thinking about leadership, for example. We have a we don't have a uniform leadership model, certainly in the U.S., but it tends to be fairly homogeneous, I think. I would think the leadership model coming out of Africa would be somewhat different, but would be similar to some of the things we say are really good about other cultures. I wonder if we could form something where we really do honor some of the values and leadership traditions that come from another culture by melding those. So it's not just taking what's done in the U.S. and this is how we do leadership and now let us teach you how to do that, but really making it a melding of the best of both approaches.
You know, I may just make a quick comment on this question of leadership. The example that usually comes to my mind is democracy. I think there's a group of people, the Yoruba people of western part of Nigeria, they're also in other countries as well, but very large group of people, probably 40, 50 million people in the continent of Africa. And so when you look at the culture in the place, actually they have had democracy for thousands of years, but not in the way we think about democracy here. I mean, just to give you an example, if someone wants to become president of Nigeria, the person may have to go and consult with one of the prominent chiefs, in fact, several of the prominent chiefs of this tribe, to be able to get their endorsement first before even thinking about becoming president. Now, of course, to us here, it doesn't look reasonable because it's one man, one woman, one vote. But in actuality, the chief is, even though he's acting on the behalf of his people or her people, generally speaking, he's there, but to the Western eye, he's there as an autocratic leader, you know, just does whatever he wants. But actually, that is not true at all. He was there because there are these people who want him to be there. In fact, if these people don't want him to be there today, he'll be gone. But we don't think about that. But we always think about democracy in the model that we have here. So when we go to Nigeria, we go and lecture the president of Nigeria on democracy. And he's looking at us. So I think it's very important for us to be able to engage people. It doesn't mean, democracy is good, obviously, fundamentally. There's nothing wrong with it. But however, we need to take into account the cultural context in which democracy is being practiced. So which emphasizes what you just said. And as you were saying yesterday, I mean, I think because of the culture too, this idea of teacher-students, I mean, is cultural. It's not just psychological. It's cultural because an elder person is respected in our culture. So therefore, you look at the teacher as the elder, represent that elder. So you respect that person. Doesn't mean you always agree with that person. It doesn't mean you always, but you respect that person. That is a culture that you teach your children at home and that people embrace. And so that has to be factored into however we engage in this, which is what the point you were making yesterday. So it's not easy to find a student that goes to the class, first they start opposing the teacher or arguing with the teacher. I mean, that's not. But as time goes on, you can see they will engage in dialogue as well.
Just as a matter of interest, can I just ask him, just say a word about how the colonial regime worked with the chiefs? just in a
I think you should say it. Okay.
No.
Well, I think when you look at the major powers that colonized Africa, you have the British, you have the French, and you have the Portuguese and Spanish and whatever. So, but really, the British were the most successful. And the reason is very simple. The British says, okay, look, We're not destroyed on the ground. I mean, they discovered that there's, in spite of what people were thinking about the African, these people have a very established governance system that was already in place. So therefore the British says, wow, this is really nice. Why don't we just build something on top of this? We don't need to reinvent the wheel. The French says, no, we are going to reinvent the wheel. You will be a French person, you will be like us. Okay, the Africans say, okay, yes sir, we like you, but never worked. But the British, on the other hand, they have this principle of indirect rule, they call it.
Sure.
It works like a charm.